Studio 360.
If I've managed to take the reader out of their existing headspace into another world, into another person's life, and then return them safely home, then I've done my job.
N.K. Jemisin is an extremely talented storyteller.
My job is to entertain. My job is to transport.
Her best-selling fantasy series, The Broken Earth Trilogy, won the last three Hugo Awards for best novel, three in a row, which was unprecedented. Now she's got a new collection of short fiction called How Long Till Black Future Month. And here she is reading from one of the stories in that new book.
Tookie sat on the porch of his shotgun house, watching the rain fall sideways. A lizard strolled by on the worn dirt strip that passed for a sidewalk, easy as you please, as if there wasn't an inch of water already collected around its paws. It noticed him and stopped. "Hey," it said, inclining its head to him in a neighborly fashion. "Sup," Tookie replied, jerking his chin up in return.
"You gon' stay put?"
it asked.
"Storm coming."
"Yeah," said Tookie. "I got food from the grocery."
"Ain't gonna need no food if you drown, man."
Tookie shrugged. The lizard sat down on the sidewalk, oblivious to the driving wind, and joined Tookie in watching the rain fall. Tookie idly reflected that the lizard might be an alligator, in which case he should maybe go get his gun. He decided against it, though, because the creature had wide, bat-like wings, and he was fairly certain gators didn't have those. These wings were the color of rusty, jaundiced clouds, like those he'd seen approaching from the southeast just before the rain began.
"Levee gon' break," said the lizard after a while. "You should have got out, man."
That's N.K. Jemisin reading from her story, Sinners, Saints, Dragons, and Haints in the City Under the Still Waters. This book of stories has a fantastic title, which is...
How Long Till Black Future Month.
Which made me laugh. Which made me laugh out loud when I first read of it. Which was a title of an essay that you wrote.
Yeah, so I was basically talking about the fact that, you know, when I was growing up, I used to watch shows like The Jetsons, which just seemed like really optimistic, kind of fun, kiddie stories about, you know, family in the future, flying around in flying cars to get to work with a robot. And how at a certain point in my development as kind of more conscious human being, it suddenly occurred to me that there was nobody black in the Jetsons world and that they all lived in these floating habitats above the clouds. What's going on beneath the clouds? Is that where all the black people still are? Were they left behind by the Jetsons as they go off to their beautiful, shiny future? And what's going on with those people? Are they okay? So these are the kinds of things that started to hit me. It occurred to me that as African Americans, we've done lots of processing of our history, as we should, as we must, because we've gotten so many false bits of history thrown at us, so many ways for oppressive systems to justify their oppression of us. It's necessary that we understand where we came from. It's also necessary that we start thinking about where we're going. Mm-hmm. And we need to look at the ways in which science fiction renders us or doesn't render us or leaves unspoken apocalypses all over the place in which something clearly happened to us, but no one mentions it. So I feel like it's a good idea to engage with that, too.
Right.
And that's where it came from.
You are a professional psychologist and earned your living as a counselor and a psychologist. I can imagine that discipline would and does inform your fiction.
It does. I spent 20 years as a counselor working with young adults, late adolescents, and just kind of helping them work through issues. And You know, my understanding of how people develop into from young people into adults, how people cope with problems. You know, I did a lot of work at one point with adults in transition, i.e. people having midlife crises. So, you know, there are developmental patterns to be recognized. And there's a standard set of stuff that people go through when they're going through these kinds of life changes.
Right.
There's a change process. There's change theory. And as you understand these things and you apply it not only to the people who as a counselor that you're encountering, but to fiction.
Characters and stories, right?
Exactly, yeah. You know, one of the things that happens in the Broken Earth saga is that the protagonist goes through an identity development. She becomes a revolutionary over the course of the story. And this is one of the things that is part of the stages of racial identity development for Black Americans. And it's a thing that doesn't always happen the same way, but it does. There are patterns. And so, you know, if I'm depicting a character going through this, of course, I'm going to try and make sure that she's adhering to that pattern in some recognizable ways.
Behavioral science fiction.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I'll take it.
but you're only 46.
Yeah.
You didn't start publishing until your 30s, mm-hmm. right? So what made you decide, like, okay, I'm going to mm-hmm. go for it?
A combination of financial desperation and...
Because such big money is
well,
involved?
Well, it wasn't, you know,
it was
a little extra.
It was a side hustle.
I wasn't expecting big money, but I had student loan debt. So, yeah. You know, I had to do whatever I could do to scrape together enough to get out of debt sometime before 90.
Right. And now you've done that?
Yeah. It was the first thing I did with my first advance check. I paid off my student loans.
Nice.
So that was the idea, was that if I could make enough money to kind of cover some bills, then I would be out of debt like slightly less time. So that was the idea. And I started publishing also partly because I'd read a bunch of terrible novels and terrible short stories, and I was like, I can do better than this. You know, I didn't think that I had much of a chance of getting published in this field where it didn't seem like... It kind of felt like science fiction and fantasy had a really limited space for Black writers. At the time that I first started, there were really only four, and that was Octavia Butler, Chip DeLaney, Tanana Reeve Dewitt. Well, no, people never mentioned her, but her husband, Stephen Barnes, and Nell Hopkinson.
Right.
You know, if you're a Black woman writing with primarily Black characters or any Black characters, the first person you're going to get compared to is Octavia Butler. And if you're not doing exactly what Octavia Butler does, then you have a hard time kind of trying to convince people that this is what you're doing is valuable.
Or commercially valuable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Speculative fiction has a lot of stretching still to do. It is in recent years becoming a bigger tent that can encompass many kinds of people, many mythologies, many futures, and so forth. And that is a thing that I think is a positive change, but it's a change that, of course, is coming with some growing pains and some pushback and all that usual
stuff. What's an example of what it didn't used to be able to accommodate?
Well, I mean, in my subfield, fantasy, it's... easy to find. You can find dozens, thousands of medieval European flavored fantasies. If you want to find out some alternate world, you know, version of England or Norway or something, you can find that.
Game of Thrones.
Exactly. That's a good example. You know, the War of the Roses plus dragons.
Yeah.
But we've got hundreds, thousands of cultures in the world and thousands of different kinds of mythologies and thousands of different kinds of alternate histories that we could explore. Why aren't we doing that? And only recently has it become more possible for writers to breach the fantasy field with something other than medieval Europe.
Uh-huh. A lot of your work is explicitly political. And it strikes me that science fiction and fantasy are genres that are more comfortably able to accommodate explicit political ideas than a lot of other fictional genres.
Are they?
I think so. Mm. Because here you are, you're imagining a different world that mm-hmm. doesn't exist, which therefore gives you license to implicitly, if not explicitly, talk about the way this world exists in ways it doesn't need to or oughtn't to, you know?
Yeah. What you're talking about is the world building and the fact that every choice that world building involves is in some ways a critique of the way that our world actually exists. I think that literary fiction does this as well, though, sometimes. It depends on what flavor of literary fiction you're talking about. I've read lots of Toni Morrison, lots of people who have engaged with political stuff. If you are a marginalized writer coming from anything other than a privileged, sort of ethnic group or gender or whatever, then inherently whatever you're writing about is going to be political because our existence tends to be politicized. But that said, in science fiction and fantasy, you can explore beyond your own identity with that, or you can explore beyond the obvious politics, I guess, with that.
Right. Well, and readers come to it thinking, okay, this isn't going to be reality, so I'll accept this twist here, this turn, or this different protocol. In a
up
way,
to a
that,
point, yeah.
You know?
There's always a point where they start to resist. It's fascinating to see what politics people are perfectly comfortable with by running them through fantasy. I mentioned before that whole tendency of fantasy to center on medieval Europe.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's a whole lot of politics involved in that. You've got stories that, you tend to see a lot of stories about the monarchy and how awesome the monarchy
and hierarchies,
is.
Really
yeah.
rigid hierarchies taken for granted.
Yeah, yeah, yay feudalism. It's sort of weird to see all these American writers fetishizing feudalism. I don't know where that comes from, but there's a political meaning to that. But they don't necessarily think so. They think that it's, harmless romanticization. And I don't know how harmless it is, but, there's still some political meaning to it. And when you start to challenge that is when they get resistant.
Yep.
And that's when you start to understand that, these are politics, but those are the politics that they're not comfortable with.
What a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And well-deserved congratulations on all your successes.
Oh, thank you so much.
N.K. Jemisin's new book is called How Long Till Black Future Month, and it is out now.